Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. I have a new record out. Or a new EP out on Denson Peaker's Needed Pains. I would love it if you could go check it out. Thank you so much. That is the end of me plugging and promoting my own music. On the podcast today is a really, really good one. I know I say that all the time, but this was a really nice conversation. It's Monday here in the UK. The sun is shining. Wasn't feeling too great before this podcast started, but after this podcast, I am smiling. LP Giobi, I'm so sorry if I messed that up. But she's been on my radar for probably 8 months. I've been following her on Instagram, listening to some of her music, and one of my really good friends, Born Dirty, kind of put her on my radar. And she is just an amazing human being, killing it on like the whole live stream side of things, and I'm seeing her name pop up on like every festival that's kind of being announced, and her music's doing really well on Spotify and all the download sites. And she also runs this kind of foundation called Femme House, which is to promote females in house music and electronic dance music, and I think it's a really, really important kind of cause. So I got her on the podcast and we had a great conversation. She is just like an amazing person. So without further ado, LP.
And we're live, and I had to like just stop you because we just started talking about your name and talking about how people pronounce it. So you were saying that Pete Tong kind of mentioned.
So Pete Tong, he said my name so far a total of 3 times on the radio. I know exactly when and how many times. And the first time he said it right, and I freaked out. I emailed him like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've heard my name on the radio. This is so cool. You said it right. I can't even believe it. And then he never said it right again. So I think I jinxed it. But I remember, so when I took, Giobi is my mom's maiden name.
Yeah.
And it is also my middle name. But I remember going to my mom and telling her, like, Mom, I'm gonna use your name as my stage name. And I'm going to, like, it's my way of, like, reclaiming the matriarch, you know? And she said, and I thought she'd be like, hell yeah. And she looked at me and she goes, yeah, I think that's a horrible idea. And I was like, what? And she's like, nobody is going to pronounce it right. Like, trust me, this is just, it's going to be really hard for you. And turns out she was totally right.
Yeah.
Not a single, and I've even tried, like, because it's G-O-B is, you know, yeah, essentially. So I'm like, what if I write out like G-O-B, but then people say gob. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, I initially thought it was like L-P Gobby. And I was like, no, surely not.
Surely not. Surely that poor girl hasn't had to go through that her whole life. Wait, I mean, what is it like to have the name Will Clark that truly nobody can mess up?
People mess it up.
How is that possible?
Well, I think people mess it up when I say my name, Will Clark. And Americans sometimes don't understand the English accent. And I remember I was playing in Atlanta at Tomorrowland or Tomorrow World, I can't remember. And I went to the artist liaison, and you know, like you have to sign in and get your wristband and kind of do all of that. And I was like, my name's Will Clark. And she was like, what's your name? And I was like, Will Clark. And she was like, World Cup? And I was like, no, my name isn't World Cup. My name's Will Clark. And she was like, you're going to have to spell this out for me.
You are kidding me. Yeah. It was that, maybe somebody had slipped her some party pills.
This was like my first ever festival in America.
Were you like, America's the worst if we can't figure out how to pronounce Will Clark? You're going to have to write that out for me?
Well, I kind of gathered it. So like years ago when I was young, I think I was like 20, I did my like first tour in America, but one of my best friends was studying at Chapel Hill. Where is Chapel Hill? North Carolina.
Yeah.
And
wait, isn't that where Michael Jordan played?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead. I think we're the only two people on the planet that don't know that answer. And that's fantastic.
We should probably Google that. Because everyone's going to hate
Googling
us.
Googling it.
Was it Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan. Oh no, he played at. Oh, this is going to be. Oh, this is my brother. If my brother ever listens to this, which he definitely won't, thank God, is going to be so mortified.
Where did he play?
He played.
Yeah, he played for 3 years in North Carolina. Oh no, it was probably one of the other UNC.
This is so embarrassing.
I don't know.
Did you watch the Bulls documentary that came out?
Yeah, crazy.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. He's an animal. Work ethic is like key.
Insane. Yeah. I love though that he obviously was like a producer, like had the final say of that, you know, documentary, because there's a lot of stuff about him that seems like his like gambling and like some weird shadiness that like hasn't come out. I feel like he's the only, how has that not come out yet, you know? But good for him. It made him look. And I also heard that he released that because LeBron James was like kind of starting to like take over the throne, you know, and he was like, whoa, let's put out this documentary. and then I'm like, you know what, good for him.
And then make everyone realize that he was a beast. Because the thing is, like, now you kind of expect it, right? Like, we've seen all these amazing people kind of like, let's say for instance, like Billie Eilish right now. She's like the Michael Jackson. She's like the Justin Bieber. But we've seen those types of people throughout our childhood and us growing up. So like when somebody new comes on, you're like, okay, it's just another like completely different and very different talent and everything like that. But it's another version. Superstar. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But
I don't know how this is connected, but you know what this makes me think of?
What's that?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and actually it's probably not at all connected, but I've been thinking about the okay, you know, the first person who broke the world record for the fastest mile, and then as soon as that happened, like 10 people or what, you know, a bunch of people broke it right away.
I didn't know that.
Okay, yeah, and I think about this all the time. Once you think it's possible,
yeah,
it becomes possible, you know?
Yeah.
That's like not really totally connected, but that's just popped into my head.
No, I think it is because it's mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think also what people don't realize is that there's actually, when you say you're running the fastest mile or you're doing something, so many other people can actually do it. They just don't know they can do it, or they don't know it's a thing, right?
I think about this all the time with my, like, I had to believe that it was possible that I could like produce the music I wanted before. Like if I didn't think that it was going to be possible, I never would have tried it, you know? Mm. And it's actually, I always take it. Like, I always am like, why did I think I could do that? Like looking now, knowing how much work it actually did take me. If somebody had told me it would take you this much work, I never would have done it.
Yeah.
Like it's been essentially like 5 years of me like grinding, living in a studio, trying to like and I'm still not there, obviously, you know, but I'm like starting to see the light at least.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we ever arrive, no. But like you have to believe that it's possible, or else I don't think you can possibly put in the work it takes to actually make it possible.
I totally agree. And I think there's something about that I don't know. I was at the beginning of lockdown. I haven't done like a single live stream throughout this whole lockdown. I've refused to do one.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, me and my manager Ryan, we just were like, unless something really exciting is offered to us, I don't have decks in my place in the UK. So I'm like, well, that's a great excuse not to do it. But also it's like, I kind of want it to be exciting. I want it to be like really interesting, and rather than just me DJing in my kitchen in my pants, just like,
dude, I'll tell you what.
But you've been killing it as well. You've been doing loads.
You know what? If I had been in your place in the beginning of the lockdown, like your like position in dance music, I probably too would have been like, you know what? Awesome. This is an opportunity for me to not, you know, to do whatever else I want to do in my life, or work on music or whatever. But for me, I sort of like, I kind of had to, you know, to keep like essentially trying to get my name out there and stuff. And to be honest, there are a lot of time, the pre-records for the live streams are pretty soul sucking. Like it's just you and you and a tiny camera, and you're like, this can't be, especially, you know, we're for dance music. Our job is to read a dance floor, and that's not what you're doing anymore. And
yeah,
so it's
acting.
Different. So what I had to, it was pretty soul sucking for me at first, to be honest. Mm. And then I had to start sort of like reframe my mindset, which was, okay, you know how the Beatles, before they became like the Beatles.
I love that you're comparing yourself to the Beatles. This is fucking amazing. Where is this going?
I promise you would get somewhere. And I'm not comparing, for the record, I am not comparing myself to the
Beatles. No, I want you to. I want you to.
So me and John. Okay, so they played like at this like shitty, like tiny dive bar every single night for like whatever, I don't know how long, but you know, that's like the folklore of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I started like, I was like, okay, this is my Beatles moment. Like, I'm actually not that great of a DJ. Like, I was touring a bit and I was kind of like going in different cities, and like, I sort of knew it was working. I was like kind of doing similar stuff night after night.
Yeah.
And so you can't on live streams, because it's like the same people come back to see you.
Yeah.
And so I just was like, this is your, you know, I always tell myself like, I'm going to go practice DJing, and like, I never really do. Cause like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
And so this forced me to practice. So what I started doing is like, and I also forced me to entertain myself. Like, if I'm getting bored, then, and I can't read anybody else's reaction, like I have to be doing this for myself right now.
Yeah,
so I started like making just like drum loops and finding acapellas, and like, sort of like, I had three decks at that point. And so I was like, okay, how can I like sort of do like some live remixing stuff? And that sort of started translating into like how I started my workflow in the studio, you know? So it turned out to be like the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, I'm still now I'm realizing like, okay, so this is how much I can evolve as a DJ. Yeah. Like, I hope that in 5 years from now, I'm like twice, you know, I want to stand behind the decks and feel like this is a rocket ship I can completely control and take wherever I want.
Yeah.
No, and I didn't feel like that before.
No, I think you're right. No, I know you're right. You have to, it actually goes back to what we were saying about Michael Jordan and about being like one of those superstars. You have to put the work in, and the work that you can't just like wake up one day and you've got it. No one has that. Like, even the best people, no one has that.
It's so, and I truly think so. Like, I moved down, like I got into electronic music because, I'll tell you the story in a second, but essentially I was told like, oh, you know, jazz, you know, music theory, like the electronic stuff will be easy. Like if you know how to like make music or play the piano, like everything else will be easy. And so I was like, oh, okay, cool. And so I thought that was true. Totally wasn't at all true for me, and took so much work, but like, I thought that it was possible. And so I kept doing the work, and looking back now, I'm like, dang, so many nights of grinding. I can't even begin. It's crazy to think I went through that. It's crazy to think I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to keep going through that. It is so much. I mean, maybe I just like am not as naturally gifted, but no, it's a ton of work.
I think you're right. Like, you generally can actually play as well. Like, you do have a huge advantage being able to play. Like,
okay, see, this is what people do you not play.
Like, I can play, but I'm going to be trying to play all day. To like,
okay, so this is so people who don't actually play always say this, and I disagree, because I learned how to play right. I learned music theory, and so I rely a lot on my head instead of my ears.
Yeah.
And people who do not play use their ears so much better.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Like, in fact, I fell in love with dance music because I was studying jazz piano in college.
Yeah.
And like, everything was completely theorized. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew exactly what chord changes to play, you know, over what progression, and I knew what notes would fit into that. And like, yeah, everything was in my, you know, and like, and you're being studied, you're being graded for it, and everything's in my, it's just, and then I went to see Tornado Wallace in, a friend brought me to a Tornado Wallace show in this like tiny club in San Francisco. And I was like, truly, I didn't know what a DJ, I was in college and I did not know what a DJ was. So we show up and I'm like, why, like, there's one guy standing up there. I'm like, where is the music coming from? Yeah. Like, is there a secret band behind him? Like, I actually didn't understand tangibly. Like, also, how come the That's music so is good. So perfectly on time? And then somebody was like, no, it's coming from his USB stick. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, truly, my mind was blown. And I just, like, I didn't even dance because I was so confused. And I just stood there, like, staring at him. Like, why are these people, like, they're watching this guy? And, like, but, I mean, this was, like, a proper club, so they weren't really watching. They were just dancing. And then my friend proceeded, he was super high on acid, and he proceeded to, like, break down dance music to me, like it's for your body, it's not for your mind, like, you know, it's like kind of like tapping the kick for me, and then like putting in the hi-hat, and it was like, you know, the hi-hat and the kick for like 5 minutes, and then like a cowbell came in and everybody like lost their mind. And so I was like, whoa, this is so, what was so cool to me was that this was like music that was not for your brain, it was not to be like theorized, you know. And I was like, I've been doing it all wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I need to learn how to. And so when I started making music, I would like, you know, try to like bring in some like jazz lines and like. And I remember I would send my music to Tucker from Sophie Tucker, and he would be like, you need to say way less.
Yeah.
Like, you're saying, it's like, what are you actually trying to say? Like, try to say as much as you can with like as few notes as you possibly can. And it was so hard for me to do less because I actually was just like kind of cover. I would just like play fast and impressive to cover things up. Like, I wasn't actually, it wasn't impactful, you know? It took me years to like relearn how to make impactful music.
No, I understand that. And I know people that have been in the same situation as you when writing music, because they're like, just want to play and want to like fill the gaps.
Yes.
Whereas, I think, especially in house music, it's not about filling the gap. It's actually having the more gaps, the better the record. Really.
1,000%. Okay, but, I actually...
If it's a good record, though, sorry to butt in. It's got to be a good record.
Oh, as yet, totally. 1,000%. I've also been thinking a lot. So I'm in the process of like talking to a bunch of labels and trying to sort of figure out where the home is going to be for my music, which feels like a completely overwhelming, stressful, I don't want to fuck this up, you know, kind of whatever. But in a lot of those conversations,
what's with the overthinking?
What's with the overthinking?
Yeah, it's just house music.
It's truly, this is what I mean. I cannot help it. You should be in my brain in the morning. It's like the overthinking is, I've been like trying to meditate and do things that I like think will help. And like, oh, it just makes more thoughts come into my head.
Can I give you some advice? Because I can totally relate to this. And
yes.
I think the thing that helps me the most is start your own record label and then you can just put whatever the fuck you want out. And then releasing on other people's, there's no pressure about releasing on anyone else's label, because you can release music whenever you want on your own label. And with releasing on other people's record label, there's a few good things about having records on other people's label. You get their fan base, you get their recognition, and you get their kind of distribution, right? Like I guess it's their fan base. So you kind of have like a packaged fan base that are going to listen to your music. However, you're killing it. You don't need that. You're building your own.
Oh, shit, Will. I keep... I keep going back and forth on this. I'm like, yes, because, but this is the problem with like growing, right? The bar always moves, you know, like I thought like I could just get, and then it's just, and so now I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, well, partnering with like a bigger label, like I don't want to become stagnant. I'm terrified of being like not having, and I don't even know like what is my, how my qualifying growth, it really needs to be a question that I answer, but,
well, what's your goal? What's like one of the end goals?
It's a great question too. Well, so what I've kind of been learning during lockdown, it's like I had all these like metrics of success, you know, these goals I wanted to hit, and I've hit them, some of them, and I've thought, wow, what I'm learning is that those don't really matter, and what fuels me as a human is playing to a dance floor. And like, there's nothing that makes me feel more alive. It makes, even if it's a dance floor of like five people, honestly. And so not having that, like we were talking about this at the beginning before we started the podcast, but like, I have felt so tired. Like I thought, I'm not touring. I have like, you know, I'm sleeping in my bed every night. Like I'm going to have so much energy during this time. And I actually feel completely drained. And I think it's because I'm not getting that specific feedback loop of like the reason that I get in the studio and work every day is for that moment. So I want to be able to do that as long as I can.
So why do you need?
But so what's interesting to me though, is like, which I really am excited to talk to you about, is like the difference between American and UK dance music.
Yeah.
And some of these labels I'm talking to seem to have more reach overseas, where I think that I think I might want to be.
You want to be in the UK?
Well, I don't know necessarily in the UK, but I want like, okay.
I love this. I'm trying to think of how
I don't want to like share anybody else's career, because I respect, I mean, anybody who's doing this, like it is hard and it is impressive. And like, I respect.
You're not shooting anyone's career. It's your own.
It's just
opinions,
like playing these like 1 hour gigs, you know, in clubs in the US, and it's like,
do you know how to get over that?
What's that?
Do you know how to get over that?
How?
Tell your agent that you don't ever want to play an hour show. I did it.
You did do it, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
So how long do you play for when you like, did you say it needs to be at least two?
My last tour, I did minimum of five. I did open to close. So my last tour was like an open to close tour. And
Will, you're kidding me.
No. But the thing is like when I first started touring in America, because I was used to playing in the UK and Europe, where you play like minimum 2-3 hours. And like when I used to live in Ibiza, so I was doing like 12-hour sets like all day, just because that was my job. It was like a residency. So you're like in a bar on the sun, on the beach, and you're literally just playing all day. And then you have like an hour off, go shower, do whatever you need to do, eat, and then go back and play for another 6 hours, 6-7 hours. So it's like, I was always so used to playing for so long. And then when I signed to Dirty Bird, I got signed to AM Only, which is now Paradigm, which is the agency. And then they were just like putting me out, and I was only playing for an hour, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I'm not even getting into it. Like, I've like played a few records, and then I've got to go home or watch everybody else. And I was like, and I just asked my agent and was like, what's this about? And he was like, I think it was just, it came from the EDM culture in America that everyone was just playing an hour. And I understand festivals, like there's still, festivals are tough to like play longer. You've got like Desert Hearts, and you've got, I don't think even Dirty Bird gives you longer than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I think Crossed gives you a bit longer.
That's where I first saw you. Shout out.
Was it?
Yeah. And I was like, dude, I hadn't heard. I also like hadn't, Tech House was like just sort of reaching my, and I don't even know if that's what you call it, you do, but it was the first time I heard like bass, like the bass sounding like that was at your set. And I was like, and I truly,
which
was
one
like,
was that? What? Which set was that when I was at, it was at nighttime or in the day?
It must have, maybe was it 2018.
Yeah.
And it was like, there was like a lot of like green shrubbery behind you. And yeah. Okay. So I went and who's your agent, by the way?
Now is Cody and Zach.
Okay. Cause I think maybe like Latney Hughes who was the first person.
Latney was my agent then.
Latney was the person standing next to me at the on Acid breaking down house music for me. Which probably makes total sense.
Yeah.
He's like the first person to introduce me. The first time I played on Dex were like at his house.
Okay.
Anyways, so I remember watching you and being just like, what is this? Like so blown away. You seemed like you had, also I was kind of like, I could see you from the side and you seemed like you had such full control over everything you were doing. It was honestly, it was one of the coolest sets I had seen.
Thank you.
And how long did you play for at that set?
I think it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours. That was actually, it's really weird you say that. That's actually one of my favorite festival sets I've ever played. Like that.
I could feel that.
It was like amazing.
Like I remember immediately getting my phone, like, who is this guy? Like, what is like, just like trying to figure out everything. Like I need to know every, it was so inspiring. It's like, it just made me, like rock and roll does this for me. It just makes me like rip off all your clothes and like get down on the floor, you know, like your set did that too.
I feel awkward now. I hate compliments.
No. I love it. So do you feel like in order to play for longer, though, you have to be in Europe? Like, I mean, that's the thing. No. Is like the US EDM.
I honestly don't even think in European festivals, unless they're like the straight up techno festivals, you're playing for longer. But in clubs, like club sets, you should be playing for like 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
It's just, but just who's your agent?
Jonas at WME.
Just tell Jonas. That's so weird. So my manager, Ryan, used to be at WME, and Jonas and Ryan are like best mates.
No way!
Yeah.
the music industry is such a small, weird world.
Just a bunch of incests. It's just incestual.
So incestual. Because I have this, like, I guess I'm just starting to... Oh, and I really want to know your take on like what's happening with Tech House in the US and like, is it becoming EDM? And like, I'm so curious your take on all of that, because I'm starting to like really dig into like, you know, the Seth Troxlers of the world and like the, what is just so outside of the US ethos. And like, I'm just trying to figure out like, what do I want to make and where do I fit in here?
It's a really interesting conversation. It's for me, I think, and this sounds like cliche as fuck, but
I can't wait.
You don't, you do to a certain extent have to fit in. You do 100%. You have to kind of align with whoever you're on the same lineups with, et cetera, et cetera. But you also don't at the same time. If your music is so good and you make, and you're amazing live, and you're just unforgivably amazing.
You just, no pressure.
You just
then you don't have to.
Then you don't have to. And it takes so much time, but especially starting out. Like I'm nowhere near it, but starting out.
I think you're close.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. Like I'm still a long way to where we want to get to. But I think starting out is that really like. I don't know what to compare it to, but it's like you want to jump to the like what's cool at this moment in time, or what that new thing that you find, like that new sound that you find, and you're like, oh, this is amazing. I want to make music like this. And then like the next week, you're like, oh my God, drum and bass. Let's go there. Oh my God.
So that is 1,000% my issue, is that anytime I hear it, like it's happened with, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, so maybe you'll have to edit this. I don't know, but the stuff that I heard Mika did a remix.
Can't say that, but yeah,
I can't. Okay. Okay, so when I heard that,
no one knows like who Mika is. It's fine.
Okay. I truly was like, I need to throw everything away that I've ever worked on, and I need to start anew. And this is like, but like, it's almost, it's like, is there an audience for this? Like, who is that audience? Are these people in Europe? Like, where? Like, who? You know, it's like you need to find an audience for the music you make, or else you can't sustain yourself. But it's like, I know you need to figure that out first and then find the people, but it's scary to like go completely experimental if you don't know there are going to be people on the other side.
I think there's that balance, right? So that like project that you're talking about is, I'm sure you've talked to the person about that kind of, and about why they're doing that.
Yeah.
And I think there is, I think there kind of comes a time where you just are like, fuck it. Like, I love making this music and I actually don't care if anyone listens to it, but I would just want to make great music. And eventually people will come around to doing it.
I feel like the greatest people, you know, the people who have actually pushed the boundaries, that's how they've approached it. Mm-hmm. And I also do know that there have been moments where like I've made a track and like then I oftentimes like to work on something, bounce it and like go on a run and listen to it. And my most euphoric moments as an artist, besides being on a dance floor, have been like just me in my headphones on a run listening to something that I love. Mm. I'm like, this maybe is all worth it for this moment right here.
Yeah.
It's those, you know, those arrival moments are few and far between. And so I try to really appreciate them when they happen, but it does make me think if you just follow what, I mean, I know it's so cliche. If you follow what you love, you know, the rest will kind of come together, but it's scary to go out there and sort of try to do something super weird when you don't know how, if you'll be able to like sustain yourself doing that.
Yeah. Because that comes a point when there's, that's when the business starts talking, right?
1,000%. Like right now, I'm kind of using this. I'm playing, I'm not allowed to announce it yet, but I'm playing the Sunrise slot at a dream festival of mine in September.
And am I on the same lineup?
Is it in Tennessee?
Oh, no, it's not. No. We're on the same lineup somewhere. In New York.
I hope so. That would be so, oh my gosh. I can't wait. I just got so excited. I can't wait to like be at a festival and like get to see people that like I've been like now like kind of connected to over the internet and just like get to hug you. And I'm just, I'm going to be so freaking good. Out.
Sorry,
anyways,
carry
I'm
on.
Sort of, I'm playing this weird sunrise moment at a festival. It's like a little bit more jam bandy. And so I'm using this as like, I'm trying to write as much music as I can for this moment. And it's like kind of my way to justify, like, it's time well spent because like, I know at least I'll play it somewhere.
Yeah.
But as I go into this and as I start doing it, which was really inspired by that project I heard that shall not be mentioned yet. it's been so awesome. Like, I mean, I know obviously making like a dance floor heater that you can like rip out and people lose. At your Cross Festival, at your Cross set. I saw like how impactful that is. And like, I want to be able to do that, but it's been so awesome making music for the just like weird ass, just like actually with synthesizers and not plugins, you know, like just like actually jamming on the piano and like not on a click. Like it just the things that I feel like you don't know if they're going to work or not, just taking the time to do them is just like, that is rewarding in and of itself.
Yeah, and I think that's what not playing in clubs has allowed us to do.
Totally. Totally. Which is so the fact that Bicep released their album, you know? And did you know that it went to number one on the UK pop charts? Yeah. Like,
the UK has this amazing thing, though. Like, this is the difference between UK and America. And I'm not too sure. I might be telling you how to suck eggs, so just tell me if I am. But, like, our house, like, we have constantly house music in the top 40. And it might be commercial house music, but it's house music. So, like, that's the difference between America and the UK, is that, this is no disrespect to, like, what's in the charts at the moment. A lot of it is very far away from what I would want to listen to. Like, one of my mates, a really good mate of mine, is called Joel Corey, who I'm not too sure if you heard
of. Oh, wow.
Yeah, like,
wait, didn't he just do that? Did he just put out that track with David Guetta, the band track?
Yeah, yeah.
I got a band, but I'd rather... I mean, it's catchy, man.
It's catchy as fuck. But, like, he's killing it. Like, his record last year got the biggest... dance record in the UK at like that of 2020. But that,
what was it?
Head to Heart, MNEK record.
Oh my God, that was him?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that record is fucking huge.
Yeah. So, but like that's our radio. Our radio is that type of music. So
whoa,
the culture of house music is like, I never really understood it when I came to America because it's all hip hop, right? Like not all, but a lot hip hop. A lot of it is hip. You go to a club and it's hip hop, like a generic yeah. club, and it's hip hop. You go yeah. to a generic yes. club in the UK and it's house. It's not good
oh
house.
My God. Wow.
It's not good house. It's probably a lot of it's going to be cheesy and really shit, but it's house. So the whole Bicep thing is, well, first of all, Bicep are just on another level of themselves, but we have that culture and we stole it from America. Really? We just kind of like adopted it. Started in Chicago, in
See,
New York,
I think
in
about
Detroit.
This all the time. What the fuck happened? Because like we did start it, and now I feel like in order to really like understand good dance music, you have to go overseas.
I hear what you're saying, and like this is
or
kind
maybe
of...
maybe I'm just like maybe there's you know maybe in Chicago and Detroit, and like maybe there are still super awesome. I mean, I know there are still super awesome underground scenes, but what EDM has done in America has. It's such an interesting
I think there's some like to be fair I play more in America than I do in the UK or Europe, and I have some bloody great parties in America.
Your favorite party you played in America?
That's so hard.
I know my it's not as hard though.
My most favorite last year was okay. It's tough because there's a lot, but for just pure club was Red Room in Brooklyn. It was just unreal.
Whoa, Red Room. I don't even think I've heard of it. I've only played at Elsewhere and like the Brooklyn Steel or something like that.
Yeah. Brooklyn Mirage is amazing as well, but Red Room.
Oh, yeah, I played there. Yes, that place is so yeah, awesome. Amazing.
But Red Room was just, it was the most, it's the most like what you would class as, what you would think as like a British European kind of just dark dingy room really. But there's loads in America. It's just we're just like it just depends on the type of music you play and the type of music you get booked for.
See, and I'm going through this really weird I played my first live gig and my first show back yeah. actually, well, my first show a week ago.
Where was that?
It was in Florida, of course.
Woo! Florida!
And it was actually, yes, it was kind of like, it actually was kind of, I was told that it was at an outdoor venue.
Oh, they lied to you.
They absolutely, outdoor venue, socially distanced, it was truly not that. It's actually like kind of wild. And
there was like literally like dudes doing cocaine off girls' boobs and
everything. Actually, first of all, it was definitely inside and I definitely looked down and there's like a girl in the front just like, actually this like, she actually was railing a line off of the front rail. And I was like, this is, welcome back.
Welcome to Florida, baby.
Florida, man. And
I love Florida.
It was kind of because since the pandemic, I've sort of been able to experiment more. I've been able to play longer sets, obviously streaming. I've been able to like, and also, like, obviously there's no dance floor in front of me. And so, like, I don't feel the need to, like, banger, 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 bang. You know, like, I can just, like, play music and make it more of a journey. And, like, I've really been enjoying that. And then the show back, I was like, whoa. I literally had 55-minute set. And I felt so, like, the whole time I felt, like, all this pressure, like, keep them just, like, going insane, you know? And, like, it was just, like, And it just really made me go, whoa, okay. I think I've grown a lot during this pandemic and I don't like, I'm trying to now refigure out where are there spots in America that I can like be weirder at? Like what are the underground? I'm just sort of reassessing. Okay. Where do I actually fit in? Where do I want to fit in?
I think that's it. It's what do you want?
Yeah.
It's where do you want? And that's fine. Right. Like I feel like your perception.
Do you think you could do both?
Maybe. Fuck it. Why not? But I don't. I think you do two things. So you have like your festival thing,
yeah,
and then you have your club thing.
Ah, Totally. And I think I just need to spend more time developing the club thing and, like, you know, meeting the right promoters and the right parties and, like...
Just tell Jonas. Just tell him. Just call him after this and be like, dude.
Listen, just talk to Will.
I'll call Ryan as well and be like, mate, you got to call Jonas.
I love it. Yeah, and they are really... I mean, this was crazy. The very first conversation I had with Jonas, he's like, who do you want to be? And I was like, I kind of want to... This is the thing, and I don't know if it's possible. Like, I want to be, like, somewhere... I want to be able to be, like, in Seth Troxler's lane and also in, like, MK's lane. Like, is that possible? And in... he was like, okay. And in that call, as we're... I want the best of all the worlds. Yeah. And he was like... he, like, immediately put me on text with Seth, and we started, like... I just called him Seth. Hilarious. Seth Troxler. And we started going back and forth and sharing some music and whatever, which was, like, insane. And then he also immediately, like, put me in touch with MK's team. And I'm just like, are you... You're the man. I was like, this is crazy. So I think I'm just sort of trying to figure out, like, where do, you know... And I'm hoping it will just, like, work. It's a journey. I'm really working on enjoying the process of the journey instead of, like, focused on the arrival, which is, like, my lifelong issue and battle.
I can relate to that.
You can?
Oh, 100%. 100, like, my life... I literally was training with one of my mates this morning. And not that we're supposed to be training, so...
Hey, I'm not supposed to be playing gigs. So. Yeah.
I was like, I'm just struggling to, like, enjoy. We were talking about the process of getting somewhere and that process of, like, the journey and enjoying the journey and accepting when you've done something well, like, and sit back. Yeah, I've done well. That's done good. And to be fair, that cross set is probably one of the only sets that I've actually come off stage and been like, fucking smashed it.
You are kidding me. That is okay. So there's that just did a few things for me. It free, because, like, there's been very few sets I've come off stage and felt like, yeah, you know, like, my skills are where I want them to be. I felt like I had control up there. I felt that doesn't happen for me very much. And I thought it's actually super reassuring to hear that from you, who, like, I look up to so much.
Yeah, but I think speak to everyone. Speak to, like, I don't know Seth, but speak to Seth, speak to Mika. Like, ask everyone. Like, Tiga has, like, a really good podcast as well.
Oh, I listen to it.
But listen to mine beforehand, clearly. but I can't remember who he's talking to. And they were saying, like, how many sets do you like compared to you're not happy with?
Wait, I listened to this one. I listened to this one. Yeah. He was talking to somebody who it was like a bicep or something. It was like it wasn't forte. Was it forte?
I don't know.
I remember them saying way less than, like, the ones they did feel great about.
They prefer, like, they like 5% of their sets. That, like, yeah. And if you think about it, okay, let's take the fact that our lives are amazing and our jobs are amazing and we're doing everything we want to do, but we're all massive control freaks.
You know what I was thinking right before I stepped on the first gig I played. I remember, like, there's, like, all this adrenaline and, like, excitement and anxiety and, like, you know, like, wanting it to be as good as it can be in my head, and I remember thinking, am I insane for wanting to do this for a living?
Yeah, it's insanity, because you I can only speak for myself, but from experience, from talking to friends, like, I remember playing Splash House with MK and Walker and Royce. And I think Fish was there. Loads of people were there.
And the lineup.
And I was just like, it was my least favorite set I've played, like, ever. Like, probably to the point where I wanted to quit music. Like, ask Vanessa and ask Gab from Walk on Royce. Like, I was literally, like, the most depressed person after that set. I was like, this is just fucking bunch of frat boys that don't want to listen to music. Like, no one enjoyed my set. It was boring. Like, blah, 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 blah. And that was just me kind of projecting, like,
yeah, I just felt shit about it. But that's totally fine. Like, not everybody that works a 9-to-5 job is not going to love their day, their job
that's
every day.
That's so true.
Splash House was in, this is no disrespect, like, I love that Splash House guys that run it and the girls, but like, it's like a million degrees heat, like, in the summer. It's fucking awful. It's just a load of sweaty dudes, like, jumping about, and I'm like, this is, I'm probably never gonna get booked there again from saying this, but fuck it.
Dude, I remember that's so funny because I see during the pandemic, I told myself I was going to work on what I really have been working on. I haven't totally arrived yet, but what I'm working on is trying to find internal self-worth and validation from myself instead of outside sources. Because I think that like needing the outward validation will just, especially in the industry that we're in and what doing what we do is scary. And anyways, I really decided that I needed that and like had to go to therapy and work on this after I played a set in St. Bart's. And
where's that?
It's in the Caribbean. Okay. Oh my God, this is embarrassing. St. Bart's is, I think it's
somewhere there. It's fine.
it's some island. Yeah. I'm directionally challenged, so. anyways, and it was like a really cool, like I should have played cooler music, you know, and I didn't. And I remember finishing that set and I'm like, it was the most unbelievable setting. It was so beautiful. And I finished that set and I like needed to, and the promoters were like, literally anything you want, like all the booze, like all the food, just you like truly rolled out the red carpet. And I had to go straight home and go into bed and journal because I was like, that was the worst I've ever played. And like, I hate like, and how, like I couldn't even, and my partner was with me and he was like, dude, let's go have fun. I was like, I spent so much time working on this and I'm bad at it. And like, what am I doing in my life? And like having like a total fucking breakdown and crisis. And he was like, whoa, if this is what this job is going to do to you, like, I don't like, you need to figure this out. And it's so, I just can't believe how I couldn't. You want it to be so good, you know? You work so hard at this and you want it to be so good and you want to like have people enjoy it. And it's just like truly the worst when you're like, this is going horribly.
Well, I think it's when, for me, it's like when you have like, it's outside factors, external factors that kind of control your, you're right, control your emotional, where it's like for me releasing music, I had like a really long conversation with Justin Jay on the last podcast and like talking about how releasing music for me during lockdown has like not become fun. And then because you're like literally just looking at numbers, there's no ways to see if people are liking your music by seeing your like peers play it in clubs or seeing people enjoy it in a club, if you know what I mean. So it's just like, oh fuck, Spotify didn't playlist it, so it's gonna do shit, or Apple didn't playlist it, or Radio One didn't play it. But
so real.
You're right. When it's out of our control, or when it's out of my control, I like to be the big man and say, I've released some music, it's not my song anymore, it's the public's. But inside, I'm like dying. Like, I'm depressed for a good 2 weeks after releasing music.
That is so real. Because I totally am like, you know, like in interviews, I'm like, you know, once it's out in the world, it's like not for me anymore. It's for other people to take what they need from it. And like, it's, you know, you let it go. And no, but of course you care. Right. Of course you want people to receive it. But also a lot of that is outside of our control. Like Spotify deciding to playlist or not, like how much power they have is terrifying. And like not healthy, honestly. And I mean, they've been so supportive. I am so grateful for them. But like, it is a weird. I mean, there was a time when Spotify didn't exist. You know, like it's
crazy.
Yeah,
but what existed before Spotify? There's always somebody holding that power. There's always and
so see, that's the thing. It's like I have to find a place of like. It has to be enough for me, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be enough for me from me. I need to give myself like my own love and validation and. That is it's a journey. It's like, it's hard.
I think it's just the whole journey of being, without sounding like a dick, like of being an artist.
It
Because it sounds so horrible and
that
like
sounds so pretentious. I love it. But it's I think I'm gonna take it one step further. I'm gonna ante up here. I've never gambled or done poker. I don't know if that's the right term, but
I don't know, me neither.
I think it's the journey of being a human.
Yeah.
Like I think that in what we do, it's like sources of validation, whatever, are like way more in our face, you know, for sure. But
I think yeah, go on.
But
sorry.
To be a happy human, I think that we all have to work on, you know, making sure that our sources of happiness come from the right place, from a place that we you know can nurture and control ourselves.
100%. I think it's that codependency, right? It's not having a codependent relationship on like certain things. We've all like, I can only speak for myself, but let's speak for the whole of the fucking world. Everyone's had some sort of codependent relationship in something, whether that's whatever.
I can write a book on it. Yes,
exactly.
Sir.
Yeah, and I think that is part of it, right? You're just kind of trying to we're just fucking so egotistical. I am anyway.
Oh, you have to be like, I'm, yeah, totally. Anybody who's an artist is like, no ego. There's no, I'm sorry. You have to have a little, in order to pursue it professionally, at least, you know, and that's okay. It's not a bad thing. It's just making sure that we're aware of it and check with it. And also, isn't your mom a therapist?
Yeah. How do you know
Which
this?
I feel like gives you a leg up on all of this. Do you ever talk to her about this stuff?
Yeah, I've had 30 years of my life about talking about this. Still hasn't worked.
Dude, what a massive come up, because I'll tell you what, over this pandemic, I have spent a small fortune on therapy. And Mika told me that your mom is a therapist. And I was like, truly, what I would give to have that sort of free advice in my back, you know, phone call.
You
away.
Should have hit me up. I could have hooked you up. Mates race.
I heard she's very good. That's really
Mates
cool.
Mates race. I've been really, to be fair, I've been super lucky with my upbringing. Like, it's massively helped me. But also...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I don't know. We all still have like, we all still have to work. Like, I can know all of it, but I still have to put it in practice. And that's not up to any, that's up to me. Like, you could spend all the money. Like, let's say for instance, this is going back to writing music. You could have everything. You could have the best agent. You could have the best manager. You could have the best team around you, but you still got to write the music.
So real. That's actually such a good analogy.
Yeah.
It's so real. I know she's, and actually the my last therapy session, she literally said to me, what a drag. She literally read me so hard. She said, so it seems like you're actually the most self-aware client I think I've ever had, but you're not really making any changes.
Yeah.
It's like, noted. Yeah.
It's true. You like, I'm massively, I was very bad for it, but I think for me it just got to a point where you're like, when you get to that such an unhappy place where you're like, I can't let this happen again.
Yeah,
in certain situations. Yeah. If you know what I mean. And
totally.
And then sometimes you go the opposite way and you go too far. And then you're like, okay, I need to get a balance here.
Okay, so swing the pendulum is what I call that, and that is actually my life. I'll, you know, I'm like, in order to like try to end up in the middle, I am like, well, maybe if I swing it all the way the other way, it will like eventually rock back here. I'm so, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to eat any processed food or any sugar, period, you know? And then I'll only eat. It's just like, oh, the balance is.
Oh, it's so bad.
Okay, so I do these morning pages every morning. Have you read The Artist's Way?
No. What's this?
Okay.
I hate reading.
This book. Oh, really?
Yeah, I hate reading.
Do you do podcasts or, yeah. or I mean, a book on tape, I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Book on tape? Come on, we're fucking in 2020. iBooks.
Okay.
Book on tape. Let me get my cassette player out and fucking plug it in.
Okay, the best part about this is that I have never even, I always call it book on tape, and I've never thought twice about that. And also, I cannot... It was probably because I can't do book on tape because I'm like, I can't process information that way, which is weird because audio, you'd think you could. But anyways, okay, maybe you should do it iBook or whatever you're this fancy iBook thing you're talking about. Okay, it's called The Artist's Way. And it, I mean, I've actually read every self-help book under the sun.
Doesn't truly, work, does it?
Without a doubt. Every single one of them, I'm like, okay, this is going to be the answer to all my problems. And then I read The Artist's Way, and actually, it did change my life.
Really?
But only because it's a 12-week program, and I actually, like, did it. Like, you read a chapter, you know, every Sunday, and then you do, like, this whole work, like, 15 questions. Oh, okay. It takes hours and hours. And I also think, though, it came into my life at the right time, which I think that, like, this book spiritually honestly does that for people. I always have, like, 4 copies at my house because if I hear somebody mention anything, whatever, I just boom, here you go. This might change your life. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will, but you might as well try it. And but anyways, one of the tools is, like, the second you wake up in the morning, 3 pages, a stream of consciousness. And then you end the 3 pages with a paragraph of affirmations.
I can't do them. Can't do them.
Wait, affirmations are the best.
They're not. That is so cringe. I can't do it. So my parents, they own a drug and alcohol rehab, and they have this, like, affirmations are, like, all part of the therapy side of it. And they have, like, this affirmations tree where, like, the client has to, like, write an affirmation down and put it on the tree. The rehab's called Somewhere House, and their logo is like a tree. So they got, like, a tree and they put it on the tree. And I'm like, this is so cringe. I can't fucking deal with it.
Okay, it's definitely cringe, but I also think it definitely works. Ask your mom. As Father was talking about the extremes. So, like, when I first started pursuing music, my affirmations were... You obviously are, you feel like a safe space to me because I'm sharing the most ridiculous, embarrassing stuff ever. But the affirmations were, you are an unstoppable force. You are an unstoppable force over and over and over. And you are the piano house queen. You are the piano house queen. And so my affirmations were only, like, the things you want to be, you know? And then I got to a place where I was working, like, 20 hours a day, legitimately, and had no life. And so now my affirmations are like, you are a balanced person. You enjoy, you know, being with yourself. And, like, just they're so absurdly now the other way. I'm like, what affirmations will give you a little bit more balance?
I love that, though, but that goes back to, like, what we were talking about right at the beginning about how much work you have to put in to get to where you want to get to.
Dude, it is insane.
You've got a lot of shit going on as well. You've got your artist project, you've got Femme House, you've got Animal Talk, and do you still do the W Hotel stuff?
Well, so, yes. That was a horrible thing to say. take that back. Because of the pandemic, we were furloughed for a while. Yeah. And so I was able to just make music, which is actually why I think I started making good music, you know. So there's probably a learning lesson somewhere in there. That being said, it's starting to come back. And I'm actually, like, helping with, like, their overarching global programming.
That's
also
cool.
So... Yeah, it totally. I also, this is just how my brain works. Like, something's going really well, I'm like, well, let me break it apart. But sometimes I wonder, like, would it be better to be a master of one, you know, instead of, like, what is it? Jack of all trades saying is
master of none. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I just said master of one. Okay, so my thing is that like any sort of phrase or like saying, I always say it wrong. You'll probably
notice.
So it
just fits into what you want into your life. So it's like you were like master of one.
Yeah. Exactly. So I wonder, like, sometimes I'm like, in order to be the best at something, do you have to focus on one thing? I mean, like, all the things I do obviously feed the same ecosystem and like it keeps me interested. And I like Femhouse is probably the thing I care the most about. So like, I'm never going to not do that. But it's a full, I mean, that nonprofit in of itself, it's like a full blown, it's a full time job in and of itself. It's crazy. The programming and like, just like, you know, funding and relationships with donors and like all that sort of stuff that goes into keeping it alive is intense, but also fuels me a ton. But yeah, I just wonder, what is your take on that? Because I had a really interesting conversation with Pete Tong about this, you know, because he does a ton of stuff. When he broke down for me everything he does, I'm like, what? And he actually said he oftentimes does wonder this too. Like, could he have been a better, you know, producer or DJ if he had just done that?
It's tough because I'm much more in that realm of doing lots of things. I think you just got to do what feels right.
I know. At the end of the day, I'm like, the thing is, why am I even questioning this? Because like, I know I'm not going to do it any differently. Like, this is what I enjoy doing. But I still am like, sometimes I.
I think as long as you do whilst you're doing the thing you're working on, you do it to the best of your abilities.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like,
that's
like the podcast for me is like the reason why I started the podcast. I used to have a radio show, like did it for like 4 years. Got bored of it. It was just not for me. And
I just started a radio show and it is a lot of work.
I just don't like doing mixes when I don't want to. And in the radio show, I did like an interview series and that was my favorite part, just talking to people.
Same.
And then I was like, okay, well, let's just do a podcast. So I quit the radio show and then lockdown happened. As I was just about to start the podcast, I was like, sweet. Kind of perfect. But also for me, the podcast is during lockdown, selfishly, it's been amazing because I never get to speak to people for this long. Like, I would never have sat down with you unless we were in, like, we would never have. Like, everybody I've spoken to, apart from Mika and maybe a couple of other people who I'm really close friends with, that when we're together, we literally just sit and talk. Like, there's very rarely we get to talk for an hour straight, 2 hours, however long, with no distractions. No one's looking at their phones. No one's got anyone talking with them. No one's worrying about emails. No one's talking about whatever they did last night. Like, it's literally a straight up conversation that you just don't have. And selfishly, with that, the podcast, it's kind of helped me in like life. Just generally having great conversations. So sometimes I'm like, I can't be bothered to do the podcast. But then once I've done the podcast and like put everything into it, I'm like, this is fucking worth it.
Dude, this is what I call the stuff of life. Sophie from Sophie Tucker and I always say this, like we'll text each other with like something happens that is the stuff of life. And oftentimes my natural tendency is to be like, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this. Like I need to work on it. But like, actually, if I let myself have time for this, this is the stuff that like, this is truly the reason that I do everything else I do. So if you don't let yourself do this thing, which is sit down, have a conversation, that's such a simple thing. But I was listening to a podcast by an efficiency expert. Classic. And essentially he like the main takeaway was whatever you're doing, turn off all the notifications and just focus on that. Even if you can just focus on like doing your emails for 1 hour with absolutely nothing else, you will get through them.
Yeah,
the problem is if you just sit down and like work on a track in the studio and turn off all the notifications and just do that, you don't need to do it for that long. Mm-hmm. The problem is like the distract. And so right now I did naturally put away my phone where like, as if when I'm in the studio, I don't do that, which is, and this is, I think that's, I mean, it's enjoyable because A, it's you and this is a lovely conversation, but also because I'm doing one thing and I'm enjoying it and I'm in the moment and I'm present.
I think, yeah, you're right. When I'm writing though, I do have to have distractions to a certain extent.
Ooh, interesting. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I go in and out. I can't, unless I've got like
when I've started to write something and I'm in it, like nothing will distract me, even if it happens, so, even if there are distractions. So I'm just like fully into it. However, it takes me a while to like try and get, I need something to be like, oh, do this.
Okay, or so it's kind of like when I'm showering, I have an idea come into my head. Like when you're like on a walk and you're doing kind of something else, that's when like things are percolating or whatever. Is it kind of like that?
Kind of, but like say for instance today, like I went, I really like Billie Eilish. We spoke about this earlier. And I always just try and do like edits of her records. And there's a record, I've done like two in the past, and there's a record that I really want to do and I just can't do it. So I sat in front of the studio today with the record in front of me and I was like trying to do stuff and I'm just like, this is just not happening. And then I was just getting, that's when I just get distracted. And then I start another idea and then I get distracted again. And I'm like, this today's just not happening because the distractions were overtaking the studio. But that just means that I just wasn't in the right headspace. Like last week I wrote like three records, like, all like sound amazing, and I still got distracted through it, but because I was really enjoying what I was writing in the studio,
then,
like,
you know,
it just flows.
And are you able to not beat yourself like the days that it's just not happening? Are you able to be like,
fuck,
okay, cool.
No, I know what you're gonna say. Are you gonna say, can I sit back and be like, today was a shit day, let's roll with it? No,
totally
no. I'll be depressed
even
tonight.
Even though, you know, if you had enough trust, you would know on the other side that you would definitely be able to, you know that you're going to get those records out. Like, you know, it will happen when it's supposed to be. Yet it's so hard to just like let that be. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'll be depressed tonight. I'm like,
so real.
I'm so glad. Like, I haven't really been in a full blown relationship for the whole of my career. Successful.
I could talk
career.
About this forever.
So I'm like, I'm genuinely happy for any female that could have been with me that is not, because their life would be fucking dull every evening that I don't write a record.
Oh my God, I could talk about this for. So I've been with the same person since like before I like pursued art, you know, or
what
whatever
is, what,
this career
what
is.
What do they do? He do? She do?
He's in the music industry.
Oh, cool.
He started a music festival.
Dope.
And then sold it to MTV Viacom and now is vice president of MTV, which is hilarious.
That's amazing.
He's like not a suit at all, but he has to be one kind of. But he's seen, but also like he's more just like an entrepreneur and he happened to like be in the music space. Like I think he's going like real estate now. I'm sure he's going to do other things later. And the nights at like the studio is a good day. We have an amazing relationship, and the nights where the studio is a bad day, we have, and he's like, honestly, this, your emotions are like so big in our relationship. There isn't space for mine and it's not fair. And I'm like, yeah, that's.
It's rough.
It is rough. It's honestly like, I think all the time, like, man, that man is just like hung on, you know? And he's just like, it is really, I mean, I need to work on that and like put it in check because and like I think that comes back to like intern, like, you know, am I enough for myself? Am I okay with who I am, and regardless of like my career, what happens or what output I, you know, it's not about the output, and I'm so focused on the output.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is such a.
Have you seen the Defiant Ones? The one with Dre and Jimmy Iovine.
I love that.
Same. I've like watched that about a million times.
Okay, so that actually, but that documentary that actually messed me up because I watched it and I was like, see. My takeaway was, if you want to be the best, you have to be a workaholic who can't have a relationship.
You do. But I feel like you can.
Do you think that's true?
No, I feel like you can have a. That's just me being a dick. But I feel like you can actually have a relationship. And I think if your relationship is like really healthy, and I think you can, because it was right at the end when I think they just like. Been to like an award ceremony or something like that, and Dre was in the car with his family and or like on the phone to his wife but had his daughter next to him and was like, I'm gonna go to the studio, and it was like 10 o'clock 12 o'clock at night or something like that, and I'm like, that's, you need that understanding in the family, in your relationships, to be like, okay. But as a person, I feel like you also have to be able to not be selfish as well and understand that in a relationship there's two people. But I haven't worked that out.
Dude, honestly, like, okay, so last night he said to me, oh man, this is so personal, but he was like, I'm actually, and like, he was trying to like tell me something to help, you know, to be, he was being awesome, but it made me feel fucking awful, which was, I know I will always come second, but I'm okay with that. I will always come second to your music, you know? I know. And I was just like, he's like, but I'm okay with that. Your love is like strong and beautiful. And like, that's, I'm at peace with that. And I know that that's what it will take to be with you. And I'm just like,
you've got a good one there.
I totally have, which actually makes it harder. Cause I'm like, that is, and in reverse, this is how fucking crazy I am. I wouldn't be okay with that.
Yeah. But is that okay? This is some like dark shit. Reverse psychology. Is that him? Is that him turning around and saying that his work goes before you as well?
No, I honestly would make my life easier, but he's like, he's actually, and I will never forget this. The moment that the very first time he sat down next to me, we've been together for 9 years.
It's good going.
What's that?
That's good going.
It's honestly a goddamn miracle. But the first time he sat down next to me, I remember thinking, oh, like I had just gone out of a relationship with the first love of my life, and he was an alcoholic, and like it was an intense experience. And this man sat down next to me, and I remember immediately being like, this is a healthy, unjaded human who can actually love from a place of strength.
Yeah.
Like I knew that the second I met him, and that's just who he is. And that's attracted amazing. To that because I don't know if I always do. I don't think I always love from a place of strength. Sometimes I love from a place of fear or insecurity, you know? Mm. And it's been a trip to watch how he can do that.
Yeah, I think it takes somebody that's like fully understands who they are as a person.
Yeah, fully comfortable in their skin, yeah. Fully okay with like, because when I am in the studio, he doesn't see it like, this means that you don't love me. You love your, you know, this, oh yeah. Okay, he doesn't take it like, there's something wrong, like you don't like me as much or something wrong with me, and that's why you'd rather be doing something else. Yeah, no, he's like, I know I'm awesome. I know I'm great. You just like want to go do music. And that would be, I don't know if I could do that.
It's tough because I guess like when you're kind of talking about relationships, for me, it's like what I aspire to have around me is like somebody that just does their own thing. And like I don't need any attention. Like I could be with somebody and like not see them for months and like as long as everyone's happy and like going good, I'm like, cool.
That is amazing. I feel okay. Wow. But see I'm insane, you know, like I can't give him everything, but I also need everything in return.
Of course you do.
So completely unfair. But if you, I feel like you could find that arrangement. Do you want to be in a relationship, or are you like, you know what? I'm great with where I'm at.
I'm cool with where I'm at. Like, you go through like phases, right? Like, of, I don't know. It's kind of a weird subject for me because I've dated people for like over the last 7 years, but I've been single for pretty much 7 years. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's weird.
God, I'm so curious to meet the girl that, or are you, I'm is straight. It women that you're into?
Yeah.
To meet the woman.
I love that like everyone gets a bit nervous now. We live in this like day where like you can't say the wrong thing.
I actually really did appreciate that you asked like, oh, or got, you know, when you asked like to the gender, or whatever. I thought that was cool.
That's right. I don't suck dicks. It's fine.
It is we're entering a new era, which is awesome. And it's an adjustment, but we'll figure it out.
It's going through an adjustment. It's an adjustment that like got to give a little bit and take a little bit, but we're not there yet, but
Yeah, we're doing the pendulum thing right now, for sure. We're like maybe like a little bit overcorrecting to, you know, but we'll, I think that it'll hopefully become like a normal, like even I had this conversation with my partner the other day. I remember the first time I was asked, what's your personal pronoun? Like I didn't even know. So I studied female sexuality at UC Berkeley. I was a facilitator for this course. And we had to go, the first time I took the course, you sit in a circle and the very first thing they say is, say your name and your personal pronoun. And I was, you know, 18 years old at this point, just come from Eugene, Oregon. And I was like, shit. And like, I was like, you could have your phone out. I was like trying to Google it on the side. Luckily, I didn't have to go first. I was like, please don't have me go first. And so I figured out what a personal pronoun was. You know, when I got to me, I was like, Leah, she, her. Whew. But like, even just being asked that expanded my concept of myself. Like, oh, wait, you're telling me I have a choice? And saying, which is my personal pronoun? Like, I had never thought about that. And anyways, I was 18 the first time I interacted with that. And I was just talking to my partner about this. And I asked him, like, hey, what is your personal pronoun? Just because, like, I figured nobody had ever asked him. And he was like, what?
I like your partner.
He was like, nah, not here, not today. Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe some other time.
See, I'm like, and... I have to be careful with what I say because
I love this. I love your energy right now
because it's like, we're like, I was literally talking to a friend on Instagram just right before this conversation. And I was talking to her and was like, I love your Instagram because you're putting memes and stuff out there that I wish I could post, but I can't. Yeah. And it's not because it's like super controversial or anything like that. It's just a fucking laugh. It's just having fun and like picking on certain situations. And I just can't. Because it's just that like you're just ready to be taken down by the...
Totally.
By the,
oh my God, totally.
Ready.
And again, like I do believe that I just think like an overcorrection has to happen, but I think we'll land in a place where more people are educated and we can actually have real conversations without being terrified. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah. I just realistically, all I want for the world is for people to be happy and fucking be nice to each other. Yeah. That's all I want. I don't like if somebody tells me they're like some, whatever pronoun they are, whatever gender they want to feel like they are. I'm if we want to talk genders, like I'm pretty science based on this, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, but like, your sex is science based, true, but your gender is a social construct.
But there's people out there that will argue differently there.
Okay, fair.
Like,
I agree to disagree.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I don't disagree with what you're with what you're saying. But I just think just let people do what they want to do. But also, if you are one thing, if you're something, then allow others to do whatever they want to do as well.
Yeah.
You can't push your beliefs on somebody. It's like people preaching, like shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like as long you be you and you be happy.
But you're coming from a place of like if everybody approached it like that, we'd be fine. We wouldn't even need to have these conversations.
Exactly.
But that's because you're a good person who just wants people to be happy. And they're, you know, I think there are still people learning.
I do wonder though, how many, there's a lot of good people and there's a lot of bad people, right? You put 100 people in a room, how many of them are going to be dickheads? I'd probably say there's going to be more good people than bad people in that 100 people.
I totally agree.
So,
I actually don't even think it's good or bad. I think it's just a matter of like education.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I think it's like less worrying about what other people's lives and more so worrying about our own lives and how we can better our, because if we all better our own lives, everyone's life gets better.
Totally.
Everyone.
You have to, yes. Yeah.
But I think
it's a multi approach, you know, to this issue.
But I think what's happening at this moment in time is everyone's looking out. And I'm massively generalizing here, so don't take my words literally, but a lot of
people are looking out and looking at what everyone else is doing wrong, and
right.
and not sitting down and going,
sort of policing, yeah,
yeah, and not sitting down and going, you know what, like, this is what I need to work on, and
totally,
and for me to work on this, I need to shut out this, and I need to shut out this, and I need to focus here rather than totally. Focusing on the things that fucking, like, I'm sorry, but the, like, this is hilarious because, like, the Oprah, what was it? Oprah, Prince Harry, and Meghan Markle interview.
Oh, I just heard about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay.
Like, it's not really a big thing in the UK, but America is just, like, taking it to, like, another level.
Yeah.
And it's just like, guys, just chill the fuck out.
Yeah. Okay, so I will say, though, totally. I will say that one thing that I thought was really cool about what happened this year, which was in May/June with the Black Lives Matter movement, is that for the first time, I actually felt like white America was actually looking inward. Like, I remember my parents calling me and being like, we just had a dinner party with some of our other friends, socially distanced, and some of our other, you know, 65-year-old white friends who are having for the first time asking themselves, okay, how have I contributed to this? How has my passiveness contributed? How has my, like, lack of, obviously I'm not a racist, but am I being an anti-racist? Like, am I using my power to move the needle? And, like, it was so cool to see that I actually feel like we were finally putting it on ourselves to make change and, like, putting it on ourselves to look inward.
Yeah.
And how, you know, how many white people are buying all the books to educate themselves. And, like, it was really cool to see there was, like, self, you know, people were putting the onus on themselves. And that just really pumped me up.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it goes back to what you just said, education. I think we all need to educate ourselves. It's just that,
but I think obviously it's hard to listen to education or take an education when you're being told
what to do
when it's approaching you in a way like, yeah. I know that's literally couples therapy 101. It's like, that's not how you want not how you get your partner to listen to you. It's not how you get the world, you know. And I think the pendulum has swung. We're figuring it out, but I think at least we're having the conversations to try and figure it out, and like, that's all we can do right now.
Yeah, I think all in history these conversations have happened in different subjects or in the same subjects, right? They've happened, and now it's time to, like, keep having those conversations, and keep the pendulum's gonna swing massively one way, and a lot of people are gonna feel like this is ridiculous, but in the grand scheme of things, it will balance out.
It's like, yes, Will, snaps.
It will. It will. just hide under a rock for a little bit beforehand.
I love it. Okay, I wanna ask you something that's like a sharp left in this conversation, but what is the genre of music you make? What do you call it? Like, I'm listening to, you know, My Church. I mean, I play My Church in like probably every set ever.
Thank you.
Like, what is that? What do you call that?
I don't know. I really like.
That's a great answer.
Yeah,
that's
because because I think, like, for me, genre, like, I get asked this a lot, and it's like, what is your genre now? Yep. And I'm like, again, this is as cliche as fuck. So just prepare, buckle in for it, because it's going to be a good one.
But
I just, I want to just write good music. And like, that is where everyone else can put their genres onto whatever, because it really doesn't bother me, because I think at this moment in time, well, not just this moment in time, like, tech house has had like a rough ride, like, over the last like year.
Yes. Talk to me about that.
Well, I think every genre gets it right. So somebody absolutely does an amazing record in that genre and it goes massive, and then everyone just copies, right? So you have, let's just say, Fish losing it, right? So like, great record, it's done amazing things for house music, it's done amazing things for his career, it's done amazing things for a lot of people's careers. It's brought a lot of people into the industry that would never have been in the industry. Okay. Yeah. And I would say more so in America than the UK. It's huge in the UK, but it brought a lot more people in America to house music, right? And I think that's great. We don't need another 500,000 records that sound exactly the same, because they're not going to be as good.
Simple. So I'm worried about the next. I'm worried about this for Piano House.
No, I think the thing with Piano House, you're not trying to copy anyone, right? I was listening to your music earlier. You're not trying to copy anyone. Piano House has been around since the early days of Chicago.
That's what I'm hoping. And like, it's such a classic that I saw what happened with, because like, I remember the first time I heard like a tech house record, and I was like, ooh, this makes me feel so cool and awesome. And then after I listened to like, you know, maybe like 45 minutes of it, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for a change up.
Yeah.
You know, that's just me personally. And I'm like, just with like how I felt like the pressure to play this kind of music, and like maybe there's like some pushback personally internally for me with that. But I'm wondering if like this is like you said, this is going to keep happening, right? Like, what is the next?
Techno is going through it at this moment in time. Like,
everyone's
like a techno producer. And that's no disrespect to techno producers, but everyone can write a record that has a massive kick drum and no soul. Like, everyone can. Like, my fucking gran can. Like, it's easy. Because, especially with Splice, you can get a loop, and you can, that's what a lot of people are doing. And there's no disrespect to that. It's just not for me. And I'm happy people are doing that, like, because it makes them happy. But, like, Piano House, like, let's go back to, like, Marshall Jefferson. Like, gotta have house music. Like, that record is a Piano House record, right? And it's, or Paul Johnson, like, Get Down. Like, piano, proper Piano House record, proper house, like, soulful house music. MK, Burning, like, MK Always. Like, all these records.
MK Always. You know what I've been doing is I've been listening to a ton of that old Chicago house stuff, Marshall Jefferson, the, you know, Frankie Knuckles, and I'm trying to put dirt on my tracks. Like, I want them to sound, which is obvious. I know, like, I'm trying to, like, find the old synths they use, or, like, keyboards, I guess, they use, and I got my hands on one of them and like tried to make every single track with that keyboard to, you know, and like, and it was such a fun process.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know what, this is classic, and this, I think this will always be here, you know, there'll always be a lane for this.
I think it's really interesting this, because we everyone does this in music, especially dance music, but a lot of people refer back to
look backwards.
Yeah. Rather than looking forward. And I think it happens in a lot of music. It happens in rock. It happens in everything. And I think because there was pioneers at that time that we can, a lot of us can remember, or our parents remember. So we kind of got brought up on something. Like, at this moment in time, like, breakbeat and ravey kind of stuff is like so overdone. Like, so overdone. Like, everyone's fucking got a breakbeat. But, and this goes back to what we're talking about, Bicep. Okay, everyone was doing breakbeat. Bicep's always done breakbeat. Okay, they've always done their like breakbeaty kind of old school ravey stuff. But the thing with Bicep, they do it in their own way. They're not copying this precisely. They're doing their own thing.
Well, this is the thing. This is why I think it's so important. This is why I literally tried to recreate an old record, is because I'm not that good of a producer. So in my attempt to recreate exactly, but only using the tools that I have today, which are current, you know, plugins and like software and whatever, I'm never going to sound like it exactly. I'm hoping that I'm going to learn something along the way. And then whatever that thing that I learned, I have to then put that into my process. But make it my process. You know, like, totally. That's, I feel like that's been like, okay, so in studying jazz, we always had to do transcriptions. Like, I would have to go and transcribe Oscar Peterson or whatever.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm never like, just to study like, oh, interesting, he put this like, you know, this triad over this chord, like when he was improvising, that's, you know, and kind of like study it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you sit down to play, you're obviously not going to do that exactly, but hopefully like it's somewhere subconsciously in my mind, so that as I'm doing what I would naturally do, I'm sort of learning from the greats and incorporating that. And so part of my practice is to literally try to recreate a song that I loved, you know, from back in the day, to understand. I guess it's like my way of trying to understand the music I'm making now.
I think it's a really good way. And I think the thing is back then they only had like a small amount of gear to make it on, because it was all like hardware and it was all expensive as fuck.
Which is one of the things, is that's one of the takeaways I'm having. Is like, I have all these damn plugins. And so sometimes I literally am like, I open a session, I'm like, whoa. It's like the amount of time it takes me to pick one of these things. It's like, okay, well, what if I literally just had two keyboards? These like really like, you know, the Yamaha shitty 1980s keyboards, and I had to make something with it. First of all, I think the flow would be a little bit easier. It would probably be more fun. And I just feel like less is more. Like, that's what I'm trying to, that's what I think I'm learning from these, from this practice right now.
It's a it is a really good kind of like exercise to do, because it is so good. And that is what I would kind of advise anyone that's like, you're far from starting out, but like kind of.
No, I am. Oh, I'm definitely.
No, I don't think you are. Like, if you're starting out, then everyone starting out would not be as successful as you are right now.
I have a question. Okay. And this is like, I've been studying my church. How, I love this podcast. This is like actually secretly just my opportunity to ask you production questions. How in the world did you make it sound as driving as it, like, I'll put that, like, I have all these, I actually got my hands on all these insane stems from, my friend was at the studio and ended up with, like, you know, stems from like Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Nicks and Grateful Dead and like crazy ass shit. Mm. So like, I've been like warping these stems and like kind of like trying to loop them and like make a build with them.
Yeah.
And the only song that I can play right after that like intense build up moment so far is My Church, because it just like gets you there. Like, what makes it so driving?
I think it's in the mix down. Like, if I sent you the prod, what do you write in?
Ableton.
Ugh, Ableton.
What do you write? What do you write in? You don't write in Ableton?
No, I write in Logic.
Wait, this is actually blowing my mind. No, you do not.
I swear on my mum's life. Ask Mika. Mika hates that I write in Logic.
I was gonna say, I figured you did Ableton because I know Mika writes it. What? Wait, why?
Mika's born dirty, for anyone that's listening, by the way.
That's a good point.
I started the very first thing was EJ, which was terrible, but great.
Never even heard of it.
EJ is like a thing that you get on a cereal box when you're a kid, and it's just got like a load of loops, and you just like think you're an amazing producer. That was like when I was like 12 though. But and then I started on Reason, and then I kind of went to Cubase, and then I went to college, which college isn't college in the UK. College is 16 to 18 in the UK.
Whoa.
Yeah, and we kind of were learning on Logic there. So
that's so funny, because I thought you meant college was like the name of a DAW system. I'm like, whoa, I've truly never heard of college. What if we start that right now?
College DAW. Yeah. So
okay, so tell me, it's in the mix down? No, it can't be in the mix down. There's something else.
There's a big kick drum, and there's like a proper rumbling bass line, and the chords.
The rumbling bass line is like, what'd you make that with?
It's just a sine wave.
Really?
Yeah. That project is simple as fuck. Like, really.
Maybe that's my issue.
Like, really, really, like, probably, like, 10 channels.
No.
Should I pull it up?
Wait. Yes. Have a look. This is also, while you're pulling it up for the listeners at home, when the F are you and Born Dirty gonna do a collab? Like,
we've done a collab.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, years ago.
What is it called? This is probably before I even knew what dance music was. I was just like playing jazz probably. Music in my apartment.
You were just like waiting for Latney to drop acid. when did I write? I think this was 2019. We released one on Dirty Bird, and we released.
I'm gonna heart these on my Spotify so that I can listen to them on my run.
Me and Mika, like, oh my god, why can't I find this project?
I just want to. Can I shout out both of you right now? Because actually, as we were talking, I just had like an idea. Allyship is actually the most important. Like. It's one of the most important things.
You what,
in,
sorry?
Like, allyship.
Okay.
If for like the movement that I'm trying to, the Femme House, like the stuff that I'm trying to do with empowering women in this space, like it, allyship is so important to me in this. Mm-hmm. And you and Mika, Born Dirty, mm-hmm. are two awesome allies. And I don't even know if you know that, but like that probably makes you even more awesome. You just like naturally are a good person. But it's just, I just want to tell you that.
Thank you. No, I think for me, I really like my computer might crash. If it does, I'll call you back. I don't know what's going on. Scanning. Perfect. Oh, Logic is killing my, it's kicking my ass. Oh,
maybe you should move over to Ableton. That's
no, I'm not moving over to Ableton. Wait,
you know what I started in though? I started in Pro Tools, which is even Ooh, funnier.
That's tough. Yeah, Pro brutal. Tools to it's write music.
But I was in a band, like a live, live band. Yeah. So I was recording vocals and everybody was like, this is the standard, you know, but we were making electronic music. And the first time I finally was like, oh, this is,
it's really hard.
I just, yeah.
Yeah. I learned Pro Tools when I was at college, and yeah, it's really tough.
Man, I wish that I had, you got to study this in college. Wow. When I went to college, which is obviously later than you, we had a sister program to the jazz program that was mm-hmm. like electronic, like people experimenting electronic music, like more like nerdier, yeah. you know, whatever. But I was like, I want nothing to do with that. Like, that isn't real music. I can't believe how stupid and closed off I was. And I just want to kick myself for that. Like, if I had just, you know, whatever.
Ah, well. Yeah, but you get there. I'm just going to close this curtain in the back because it's kind of sunny out for one second. Yeah, okay, one sec.
I could say anything right now.
There we go. Right, I'm just going to quickly share this screen with you.
Okay. This is awesome. By the way, I have to go in like 5 minutes because I have this is actually kind of cool. I'm meeting with this Amy, this company that is like, it's an AI company making music. Yeah, so I'm going to like, I get to like train my own AI.
I don't like that.
You know, it's like, you know, that, okay.
Amy
that
can fuck off.
But that's similar to like the people who didn't like electric guitars, you know, like
no,
it's
I get
the
it.
Future.
I don't know.
Wait,
this is, can you see?
We could have another podcast just on this, on Amy. I can't wait. Wait, this is wild.
So yeah, that's vinyl crackle. Like, don't worry about these down here, but you've got,
okay.
Anybody that's listening to this, I'm really sorry. I've just opened up the project for my church.
I'm really sorry, but this is honestly one of the coolest things that's ever happened. It's like one of my favorite tracks, and I'm literally talking to the producer, and he's showing me his session. Are you kidding me right now?
But,
like,
yeah.
What is my life?
How many tracks am I actually using? Like 23. Yeah.
Holy shit. This is also the most well-organized session ever.
This is my life.
Okay.
I have OCD. Can
you solo the bass? Or am I asking too much right now?
Yeah, sure.
Can I hear it? Will I be able to hear it? No, I can't hear. You're going to have to... Never mind. It's like a complicated system. But yeah. This is...
But the bass is literally like one note, I think. Two notes. There you go.
Oh, you guys, I'm literally... This is so cool. This is so cool.
The kick's pretty big, I think.
Dude.
Yeah, the kick's pretty big.
Whoa.
So... But yeah, that's that.
So I just like, there's something about the combination of the hats and the kick and the bass that just make it, you can literally, it's what I pull out when I'm like, okay, at that gig when I was like, oh, this is like kind of weird. And like, I have to like hit them hard. Mm. I obviously played that.
Thanks. No, I like to just keep things as simple as possible. If you listen to most of my records, they're all really simple. But it's just about finding that, like, go listen to that, like, Marshall Jefferson, like, house music. Like, it's so fucking simple.
It's so, and it truly is for me, like, after, you know, 20 years of, like, working and not, like, to intellectualize and be, like, complicated and, like, being simple and still sounding good is so much harder.
You can play that record, though, right?
Yeah.
On the keys. Just go and make it.
I know. I kind of actually it'd be kind of that would be sick to cover that.
Do it. Before we go, because I know you've got to go, quickly talk about Femme House.
Okay, Femme House, thank you for letting me plug this. It is my 501c3 that teaches women how to produce music. So we have free workshops every month. The next one is on March 19th. I don't know when this comes out, but they're all in Ableton. That's the DAW we use, and they've actually been awesome and supportive. I know. unfortunately. And they've been crazy supportive about like trying to, they're giving out free licenses to all of the people who take the workshops.
Of course they are.
It's really cool.
Well,
and then
free.
We also have online courses, which are like a little bit more in depth. Yeah. They're a sliding scale, free for women of color. And they sort of take the workshop topics and go more in depth. And then we also like, we're doing a Desert Hearts takeover.
Cool.
In May, we just did an Insomniac takeover that we got to shoot in LA, like at,
that's dope.
In a, at Exchange, like, yeah. It was the first time I heard tracks on speakers in a year. It was fucking wild. And I also, like, I played some of my own tracks that I haven't listened to in real speakers. So I was these need some tweaking. so it's just a platform to showcase and highlight female talent, and then also an educational component to try to change that feedback cycle that right now is, I think that, you know, the education piece is a big component of that.
Well, if I can help at all, let me know. I'd love to help.
So this is what I'm saying. Like, it is that's so cool to me. The support of successful, awesome humans like you in this space, you know, saying like, this is cool and this is needed I can't even tell you what it does for the whole community. It's I could cry thinking about it. And yeah,
I think,
thank you.
I think the thing is with talking about Female House and females in house music. I've just been cancelled.
Female people.
Is like, it's just a massive lack of females writing music in house music. And I don't know whether that's, I think there's lots of different factors why that is. But there needs to be more people doing it, but it has to be good. And I think this is the thing, is like, I'm all for supporting anyone that's fucking good.
Totally. Which is like, if we could all get to that place, God, so I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
And it kind of, for me, it comes back to that four minute mile. If you can't see yourself, it's hard to believe you can do it.
Mm.
And so therefore it's harder to sit in the studio and put in the work. Are there people that have done that anyways? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, our mission is to sort of normalize that. Like, if you go to a festival and you see yourself on stage, you think like, yeah, okay, I can do this. It's mostly subconscious, you know? And then you're going to go in the studio and you're probably going to be really bad at first. And then you have an image of like being able to visually represent yourself. And that image sort of helps propel the work that it actually takes.
I also think part of that is like, really thinking about it and being truly honest, like, society, if a guy turns around and says, I want to be a DJ, it's kind of like, okay, cool, do it. If a girl turns around and says, I want to be a DJ or I want to be a producer, it's like, you sure? It's like, question. And it's so true. And I've not really thought about that until like literally now, because it's not something I actually think of, like, because I'm like, fucking do it. Like,
totally.
I'm working with a bunch of, I will work with as many females as possible, but like at this moment in time, I'm working with somebody on like her artist development. And it's so strange because society just doesn't think it's normal, but there's no reason why it shouldn't be.
Totally, totally, absolutely. And like, I was raised by, you know, truly hippie parents who were like, you can be anything and you can do anything. But it wasn't until I was in this band, actually, this like Daft Arts team. I was like, you know, playing with synthesizers from the Daft Punk Pyramid Tour, like crazy shit. And we were in the studio with dudes who, and I had the best experience with them. They were the most awesome humans. But I was reading an article that Grimes had just written about how she produced her last record. And I literally went, holy shit, she's the producer of her music. And then I went, wait, could I be the producer of this band?
Yeah.
And then I went, because here's the thing, like, having more female producers that can like revolutionize the world, I don't know. But what it did for me was it made me expand my concept of myself. Like, what else do I not think I can be? Because I just never even really occurred to me.
Yeah.
And then I went through this weird thing when I started stepping into the role of producer. I started like, this is, and I'm still trying to figure this out and analyze this. I started dressing like a dude because I found that I was going on tour with another DJ or like, you know, mixing into another DJ, like in order to be taken seriously, like maybe even like subconsciously for myself, I felt like I had to like sort of like look like them. And that was a, I'm still like working that out. Like, you don't have to look like anybody, just be yourself, you know? But I definitely, I went through a weird, like, cause you know, like there's like the nervos of the world who are like, are wearing a bra on stage and who are, and like, I subconsciously was like, oh, they probably don't make their own music, which is horrible and like very sexist of me.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The thing is, I think it's normal, but it's not right to think like that.
Totally.
Right?
I think I've had to check myself several times.
Totally. And I think it's totally fine. But the weird thing is I actually think about that with guys as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, this conversation is so enlightening for me. Whoa. I mean, I'm a product of the society, right? And I've never questioned that for a guy.
Yeah, I do all the time. But it doesn't bother me. The thing for me, somebody writing that your music for them doesn't make you a worse or better artist. And I think especially in dance music, there's been a kind of a divide where you have to do everything, and that's just not how music is. Simple.
Okay, I had the most awesome conversation with Steph LaFera. She's our little umpire, but then she's now at WME. She's actually a partner at WME now. She's such a boss. And she said to me, you know what I think is hurting women the most in dance space? And I was like, so curious to hear this because I've been trying to figure it out. And she's like, I think that women think they have to do everything in order to be taken seriously. And like none of the, like, you know, the biggest DJs I've worked with in my career, like they have, you know, other people doing their mixes and other people, whatever, like you figure out what you're really good at, do that. And like, it's okay to collaborate.
Totally.
And I was like, oh, I wonder if that is a,
the thing
was really interesting to me.
I totally agree with her. The thing that the issue is you have a fan base that, well, not you, but there's a fan base, right? That will automatically say that you don't write your own music, so that means you're not a real artist. Fuck those people. You're gonna just get people like that. Like there's dickheads and there's non-dickheads. There's more people.
Like what we were talking about.
Yeah, there's more people that say, and this might be a bit not controversial, but might be a bit disrespectful for me to say this, but I don't really care. I truly believe in it. Is that being a female? I'm not a female, so I can't speak for the females, right? So I've got to put that as a thing. But being a female in this industry, you're gonna have dudes that want to fuck you. Simple. Yeah. That is life. But let's be honest. You're a female. Dudes want to fuck you anyway. Simple. I'm sorry. That is how dudes are. And obviously I want everyone to be respectful, but that is how it is, right?
Yeah.
Women will have much more of a sex appeal to men. Okay. And also being a female in this industry, you do actually have an advantage to a certain extent.
I believe that too.
Like there are, especially now, which is great. More promoters are booking more female lineups. Which is great. There's actually a lot less women in there. So if you're a female in this art, in this industry, you are fucking on a win. You're on
That's
a proper
I
win.
Say. I like to like whenever I teach a course, I'm like, this is like, get in there, get, start making exactly. music, get out there.
Exactly. And the thing is, there's going to be so many negatives. Okay.
Yeah.
Being a female in this industry, but there's also so many negatives being a male in this industry. There's negatives in every walk of life. The negatives actually make you a stronger human being. And I think we all have to realize is that there's some negatives that aren't right that we all have to kind of push against. We all have to, if you know what I mean. But we all have to accept that those negatives
actually make us better human beings because we learn how to deal with them.
And I think that's really well put. And I think as an artist, like one of the most important things that we can do is learn how to, we have to, it's fucking hard. It's fucking hard. I mean, it's awesome. And it's amazing. We're so lucky, but it's also really hard. It takes a ton of work. Touring is really intense.
Yeah.
It's all the things. And so I have had to work really hard to try to get all the good and the bad. I have to, both the good and the bad things, I need to figure out a way to have those fuel me. You know, just the way that the positive, awesome dance floor experiences fuel me, like the negative shit that I have to overcome being a woman or just being a human in this industry, like also have to figure out how to, you know, make that fuel me. And I think that's a really exciting task and one that's really important. And like, even like going back to like, I started dressing like a dude because like, I wanted them to see me as like a peer and not somebody to fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, that sort of hurt. Like, that's not creatively who I also want to like dress like a woman sometimes, you know, and I need to like overcome that and like let that fuel me to like, you know what, maybe you want to fuck me and I'm still going to get behind these decks. So it's like figuring out a way to just work through all of it. Yeah. I think that we all have things to work through, you know?
I 100% agree. And I think you just got to be yourself. And I think that from female friends that are producers that I know, I don't want to name names because I know they struggle with it, but when people say that they don't write their records, and some of them don't, just fucking own it. You don't have to, just be yourself, and you don't have to be the most perfect producer in the world. Some of the biggest artists in the world, if I could name a list right now, that like, I had somebody on the podcast, Reset Robot was on the podcast, he writes so much music for so many big techno acts and no one knows.
I know, that's the part that is like, that is so, if I work with somebody, I'm definitely going to give them credit. And I'm definitely going to like, and also I actually think as my role in Femme House, you know, is to be like, it's okay to collaborate.
Yeah.
Hey, while you're learning and while you're like, yes, do you need to get in the studio and grind? Yes. Do you need to open up Ableton every day and like, you know, work through it? Yes. Do you need to, but like also, if you can work with somebody who's better than you at something, absolutely go do it.
Totally.
Learn from them, you know, make your record the best it can be. Like work on your ideas. Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, I totally agree. I think it's just accepting who you are and not trying to like wear rose colored glasses and smoke and mirrors. You're just like,
is that the takeaway from this podcast?
I think so.
Accept who you are, from Will and LP.
LP Gobby.
LP Gobby. Oh God, people are gonna think that's my name now. Oh,
right.
I just really want to just like just wrap up real quick here and say thank you for like the first DM I got from you. I like ran inside and I told my partner, I'm like, I've looked up to you and I've respected you since I first saw that set that changed, that kind of like sort of changed my life and blew my mind. So to be on this podcast right here is actually fucking insane to me.
No, thank you so much. I kind of heard from you from Mika. And that's maybe 8 months ago, I think. I kind of
love him.
And I was just like, I've always been checking what you do, and I really like what you do. I really like who you are as a person, and kind of your persona online is so important. It's so important to have people like you. And
I feel the exact same way.
And the thing is, I think like you're not just trying to do you, you're trying to help other people, and that's so important. So just keep that shit up. How can people follow you?
At LPGIOBBI, which is GOB.
And how can people get involved in the Femme House kind of movement?
Yes, Femme House, all the handles are at This Is Femme House, FEMMEHOUSE. Our website is thisisfemmehouse.com. You can sign up for any of the workshops. We're going to be starting a masterclass series, which I will definitely be hitting you up for, Will. Yeah. It's a safe space, awesome community. Women are trading tracks and getting notes from each other, and it's really fucking cool to watch it.
Dope. I love it. Keep safe, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you. I adore you. Thank you.
Big love. Stay on.
One sec.
Okay.
I just need to hit pause. I know you got to go. And that is a wrap. I hope you enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it. I am feeling good. I hope that got your week or started the week nicely for you. Make the most of it. Have the best week doing whatever you do. Keep safe. Give us a little review if you want, and see you next time. Big love.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.